Pauli Murray has been called one of the most important figures in 20th century African-American civil rights history. This remarkable woman was the granddaughter of a mulatto slave who, among other achievements, was a founding member of CORE, graduated at the top of her class at Howard University School of Law, was named Mademoiselle Magazine's Woman of the Year in 1947, wrote states' laws on race and color, which Thurgood Marshall called the Bible for civil rights lawyers, was appointed to JFK's Commission on the Status of Women, and co-founded the National Organization for Women in 1966. Murray is now the subject of Patricia Bell Scott's biography, The Firebrand and the First Lady, Portrait of a Friendship, Pauli Murray, Eleanor Roosevelt, and the Struggle for Social Justice. Patricia Bell Scott is Professor Emerita of Women's Studies and Human Development and Family Science at the University of Georgia. Again, the name of the new book is The Firebrand and the First Lady, and it's a pleasure to welcome Patricia Bell Scott to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure to be with you.
Give us a sense of how you came to this particular friendship and the subject matter.
I came through to this friendship in response to a letter that Pauli wrote to me actually about 33 years ago now, in which she mentioned Eleanor Roosevelt, and she also made the comment, "You need to know some of the veterans of the battle whose shoulders you now stand on." And at the time, I did not think that she was necessarily talking about herself, because she did mention Eleanor Roosevelt in the President's Commission on the Status of Women. But over time, I decided that I would pay attention to the letters between them and went to the Schlesinger Library at Harvard and examined them and immediately knew that this was what I was supposed to do, that these were the two of the veterans that I needed to learn something about. Unfortunately, I did not realize this until Pauli was no longer alive. So this letter haunted me for several years before I actually decided this is something I'm being called to do.
Let us begin with Pauli Murray and what we know about her and what we should know about her.
Anna Pauline Murray is, I believe, one of the most important figures in 20th century American history. Her work is central to the human rights movement, specifically as it relates to civil rights and women's rights. She was an important writer. The list of firsts that I could give you in terms of the things that she did would just be almost unending. She was the first African-American woman to be ordained as a priest in the Episcopal Church. She was one of the first women to graduate from Howard University. She was in law school. She was the only woman in her law school class. She was the first woman to write a law review essay on the issue of discrimination based on the basis of sex. She was arrested for disobeying a state ordinance that required segregated seating in the state of Virginia. And this was well over 10 years before Rosa Parks, whom we celebrate, and as we should, was arrested for doing the same thing. She wrote what is, I believe, a predecessor to the memoir by Alex Haley, Roots. Her memoir is called Proud Shoes, and it is just incredible, and it was published in 1956. And when that book was released, people didn't know how to receive it. They said, oh, it reads like a novel, but then there is history there, and it is exactly the kind of writing that we now treasure when we talk about memoir. So she's an early proponent of that movement. The list just could go on. Oh, she's the first African-American woman to graduate from Yale with a doctorate of juridical science. Mm. She was the first African-American to teach at the newly established law school in Ghana, the Ghanaian law school. Just incredible person.
It is an incredible list of accomplishments. NPR, our own network, called her the Black Queer Feminist Legal Trailblazer.
you've never heard of. Why do you feel that she has been in the shadows for so long?
Well, I think there are several reasons. One has to do with the fact that she was brilliant and impatient and found bureaucracies extraordinarily trying. So although she was very dedicated to the NAACP, a lifelong member, although she was a devout Episcopalian, she had trouble working in those bureaucracies, so that she frequently angered the people with whom she had to work. And by and large, when the history of the civil rights movement is written or talked about, invariably the people who get the most attention are the people who have been in institutional leaders. So the leaders of the NAACP and people who were involved with the Legal Defense Fund, such as Thurgood Marshall, are people who get most of the spotlight. Polly was also innately shy, which meant that it was often difficult for her to push herself forward. Because she was so brilliant, she frequently was the person who would do the behind-the-scenes work. I like to call attention to the fact that she was the person who wrote one of the early papers, foundational papers, that was used as a background for the Brown decision. But when we hear about the Brown decision, Polly's not a person who gets credit for that. But she was strategically very important. She also functioned during a time period in which her sexuality, in addition to the fact that she was female, was used against her. So to be put forth as a leader in the civil rights movement in the 30s and 40s, the preference was for males. And then the expectation was that if one was female, one certainly would want it to be perceived. They expected you to be perceived as middle class, heterosexual. And Polly had the middle class background, though not solidly middle class in the traditional sense, because she did not grow up well off. But there were always these rumors about her relationships with women. In fact, in an interview years later, she mentioned that one of the things that she felt was that when the NAACP refused to take a case where she had been arrested for the case where she was arrested in Petersburg, Virginia, for not moving to the back, for disobeying an ordinance, she wondered whether or not that her sexuality might have been part of the reasons that they didn't want to take the case. They wanted you to be squeaky clean. And she said to that interviewer that she felt that she was not Simon Pure. So bias, discrimination on the basis of her race, on the basis of her sex, on the basis of her sexuality. And I also dare say that Polly's independent-mindedness, her willingness, her insistence on challenging authority head-on was problematic during a time when young people were expected to wait their turn, to be quiet, and to defer to elders in the movement. And Polly was always challenging. I love a story that she tells in her family memoir of the first time she filed a complaint against discrimination. She was at the breakfast table with her family, and she saw her aunt, who became her adoptive mother, put pancakes on the plates of everyone at the table, and she saw what her adoptive mother put on the plate for her grandfather. She put 3 pancakes on his plate and put 1 on Polly's, and she turned to her Aunt Pauline and said, "Well, Aunt Pauline, why does grandfather get 3 pancakes and I only get 1? So, and she was only 6 years old. And how does one respond to a precocious 6-year-old in such a way that doesn't obviously privilege age, sex, and status? So she and that was at 6. So she had this very discerning eye, and early on an insistence on equality and challenging inequality wherever she saw it. Very problematic for her relationships with people. And I think that has affected how she has been considered in the historical record, which is one of the things that I have wanted to try to correct with this work.
Patricia Bell Scott is the author of The Firebrand and the First Lady, Portrait of a Friendship, Pauli Murray, Eleanor Roosevelt, and the Struggle for Social Justice. So let us talk about her relationship with Eleanor Roosevelt. How did she meet her?
Well, they saw each other for the first time in the fall of 1934 when Eleanor Roosevelt visited Camp Terra, which was a camp for unemployed women located in upstate New York in the Bear Mountain area. And Eleanor Roosevelt showed up unexpectedly behind the wheel of a convertible coupe, and Pauli was sitting in the social hall of Camp Terra when Eleanor walked through. And she was very impressed with the fact that this was a woman whose behavior suggested that she had a sense of her own autonomy. Pauli, being innately shy, didn't speak. She hid behind her newspaper and observed the First Lady. But she kept this memory with her, this is 1934, in her mind, so that 4 years later, when FDR, the president, visited the University of North Carolina to deliver a speech, and during which he talked about how wonderful the university was, praised the university for its faith in youth, and for its liberalism, and Pauli, having applied to the university and would soon be rejected on the basis of race, was just beside herself and felt that she had to respond. So she wrote a single-space typed letter, 3 pages long, and calling FDR out on the university's policy, all-white policy, which did not allow black students to be admitted, and remembering Eleanor Roosevelt's seeming accessibility and openness, she decided to send her a copy of the letter and to send a cover letter to Eleanor saying, I know you're busy, but I want the president to get this letter. And I don't know if you remember me, but I was the young girl sitting in the hall when you came through Camp Terra. Well, the president's staff took a month. He forwarded the letter to the Office of Education. It took them a month to reply. Eleanor, on the other hand, wrote back. And her letter symbolized the nature of the relationship as it was beginning, in that Eleanor said, I understand, but there's great, you know, I understand your frustration, but there's great change coming in the South. One must work in conciliatory ways. And Pauli was happy that the First Lady responded, but also this was not an answer that she was willing to accept. She's impatient. She wants to move forward. So there's tension as the relationship begins between this impatient young radical woman and Eleanor Roosevelt, who is the cautious elder, who is also restrained by her responsibility as the First Lady to a president who has a measured approach to the issue of civil rights. So it begins there, and then there are a series of tests in the relationship for the next few years. They become allies as they lobby the president and the governor of Virginia to save the life of a Virginia sharecropper accused of in the shooting death of his white landlord. He is accused by an all-white jury and sentenced to death. And the jury is comprised of men who have paid the poll tax. And so this young man is not tried by a jury of his peers because he is destitute. And there are all kinds of problems with the trial. Some of them seem to foreshadow of some of the issues that we're dealing with now. But that case proves to be a turning point because Eleanor then, because she's getting so much information from Pauli, lobbies FDR, she lobbies the governor, she makes an 11th hour effort to try to push the night before Walla is executed, because he is executed, to get FDR to act, but he doesn't. He says this is a state issue. He cannot intervene. But when she calls the NAACP office in tears to say, I have done all I can do, it really makes an impression on Pauli because she realizes how sincere the First Lady is. And this moves the relationship to another level. And then FDR dies in 1945, and then they began to have meetings ever so often, primarily at Eleanor Roosevelt's New York apartment, and then Pauli begins to get invitations to see Eleanor at Valkill, to which she takes her aunts and she takes other family members as well as close friends. So the relationship in the last 10 years of their life moves to one of a close friendship, not simply as close allies. And I neglected to say, though, that even during the period where it was a sort of a tense relationship and Pauli was in school at Howard University and Eleanor was in the White House, Eleanor invited Pauli to the White House. So she did go to the White House to have tea and talk about those conversations were mostly about labor issues and issues of race.
One of the ingredients in the relationship that comes very obvious in the book is the brutal honesty between the two women.
Exactly, which is just so refreshing to see two women. I mean, this is an unlikely friendship. Pauli is the granddaughter of a mixed-race slave. Eleanor Roosevelt is someone, she's the niece of a president, the wife of a president, and her ancestry entitles her to membership in the Daughters of the American Revolution. Yet these two women found this friendship. They formed this friendship. And what I learn is, and I think this allows them to be able to have this brutal honesty, is the fact that they're actually similar in a lot of ways. They're both shy. They were both child orphans. They both lose parents at a very young age. They are reared by elderly kin. They're both lovers of literature. They love writing. They both, despite all their energy and their seemingly innate abilities to be leaders, I've mentioned that they were shy, but they also suffer from time to time from anxiety and low spirits. They love dogs. You know, they count dogs as among their cherished friends. So there's a list of things that I discovered in looking at the relationship that they share, which are not apparent when one first thinks of Pauli Murray and Eleanor Roosevelt. They had a lot in common.
So let's talk a little bit as we begin to wrap up as to what they accomplished together, what they were able to work on and work out.
Well, one of the first things that they accomplished together, that this friendship that a friendship afforded both of them, was a kind of support and confidence in each other and in themselves that I would argue that it allowed them or it helped them grow into the transformative leaders for which they became known. So that in the course of this friendship, they moved from being a young woman who distrusted the two-party system, never voted for FDR, to becoming a registered voting Democrat. Eleanor moved from a cautious elder who advised Pauli to obey segregation statutes until they were changed. She moved from that position to actively supporting the young civil rights activists in the early 60s and by doing so, disobeyed the laws herself. So they helped each other grow, and the leaders that they became benefited the nation so that Eleanor's actions benefited the country, as did Pauli's. I also think that the work that they did, particularly in Eleanor's later years around women's issues. Eleanor was named chair of the President's Commission on the Status of Women by President John F. Kennedy, and Pauli was appointed to the Subcommittee on Civil and Legal Rights. And the work that came out of that laid the foundation for the National Organization for Women, for which Pauli became a co-founder. And that gave new life to the women's movement in the later period of the 20th century. I do believe that as Pauli pushed Eleanor to be more open and more assertive on issues of race and issues of women, that served as the memory of what she did, has served as a role model for young women who were not even alive. I can't tell you how many people tell me that Eleanor Roosevelt is my role model in some of the things they talk to me about or some of the things that I feel that Pauli had a hand in. So I think that the friendship which nurtured them to become these transformative leaders had a real impact on the nation. And then even after Eleanor dies, Pauli is still pushing the nation forward in her work with the ACLU. And, for example, Ruth Bader Ginsburg very generously mentions Pauli from time to time as a role model for her and the Women's Rights Project that Justice Ginsburg worked on, and how important that was for her own growth. And I do believe that Pauli's work and her willingness to learn to work within organizations, which is something that Eleanor wanted to see her do, has had an impact, because certainly if we can trace the line from Ruth Bader Ginsburg to Pauli to that friendship, I would certainly say that that is something that has benefited the nation tremendously.
The name of the book is The Firebrand and the First Lady, Portrait of a Friendship, Pauli Murray, Eleanor Roosevelt, and the Struggle for Social Justice. The book is published by Knopf. Patricia Bell Scott, thank you so much for sharing with us this morning. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Again, the title of the book is The Firebrand and the First Lady, Portrait of a Friendship, Pauli Murray, Eleanor Roosevelt, and the Struggle for Justice. The book is published by Knopf. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.